I'm Charles Breton.
And I'm Chris Henson. And together we are
a Jew
and a Gentile
walk into a bar
mitzvah.
Wishing I could change the things that I screwed up. What am I supposed to do? I can't give up. You know I can't give.
The Pipe and Pint is the Triad's oldest brick-and-mortar tobacconist and specialty store. It's located in the heart of beautiful Greensboro, North Carolina, at 3716 Spring Garden Street, boasting the Triad of the North Carolina's largest selection of new and estate pipes, rare tobaccos, premium cigars, a favorite of the Jew and a Gentile, and accessories, all while complemented by many of the world's most sought-after wines and over 400 craft beer selections. Again, that's the Pipe and Pint, Greensboro, North Carolina, 3716 Spring Garden Street.
Welcome to Jew and a Gentile Walk Into a Bar Mitzvah, the podcast. We're on episode 60, and together with the Gentile Chris Henson,
I am here.
You are there, and I am here, and I'm the Jew, Charles Breton, and we are the podcast where we can discuss everything from the sarcastic to the profane, or more importantly, we discuss everything sarcastically and with profanity.
Right.
Yeah. That's the important part. We're also, besides our website and Twitter and Facebook, you can also find our podcast on Theology Corner, a wonderful site with a lot of very interesting theologians with blogs and podcasts.
Right. And so after you listen to us and read us, you can get the taste out of your mouth and the buzzing out of your ear by listening to a good podcast. Although we've got high marks from our friend Russ Jennings. He says, you know, of all the interfaith podcasts coming out of North Carolina that he listens to, his favorite.
Well, he said it was of all his interfaith podcasts coming out of North Carolina, in which you and I host.
Right.
This is his favorite.
Yeah. Okay.
You have to be very specific. Russ is very particular. But he did indicate that we have a very good shot at podcasting from Wild Goose this summer.
I didn't think we'd have a problem with it. I mean, you know,
I didn't either, but the fact that he likes our podcast doesn't hurt.
So, no, it doesn't. Yeah,
since he sets the lineup. Anyway, yeah. So Theology Corner, that's theologycorner.net. And we do have to thank our sponsors, Men of the Beard Beard Oil.
When you don't want your beard to squeak, you need a good beard oil.
Yeah, well, the squeaky beard gets the oil. That's what they always say.
And I assume yours hasn't been squeaking since you've got some.
No, it hasn't. It hasn't. And Virgil Caine Whiskey, official whiskey of our podcast. And it's been out for a while, but it's also been out in that every time I've gone to Aunt Bessie's to buy it, they're sold out of it.
You're going to have to explain that.
In North Carolina, we have beverage control.
ABC.
So ABC is where you go to get your alcohol, the alcohol beverage control.
Yes.
And so since we
our
don't talk about...
Our students are the lowest in their ABCs, but our liquor stores
are the best.
Conveniently named.
Yeah.
It's still better in South Carolina. They got the red dot.
Well...
That's less creative.
It's not as good as Florida that has ABC, which is actually a private company that has about 10 times as much alcohol.
You guys got drive-in. Drive-in beer joints.
Drive-through, yeah, the tunnel in Gainesville.
Yeah, that's...
Yeah.
Yeah.
We know how to do it.
Right. Is this right across the street from like a level one trauma center as well? Or
well, Shands is right down the street.
Yeah. Rehab guy.
Well, we also want to thank the Pipe and Pint.
Is that the one on Spring Garden?
It is, in fact, at 3716 Spring Garden, to be precise. And of course, we, as always, must thank Four Saints Brewing Company in Ashboro.
Without them, we could not stand to listen to our own podcast.
Yeah.
Between them and the Virgil Caine, it's
that's how I get through it.
One to get ready and one to come down afterwards.
Yeah.
But it's usually liquor before beer. So it's Virgil Caine, then
Four Saints. Sit back, yeah, with the nice Four Saints. All right. So what are you smoking, Chris?
So, you know, I'm recording from home, so I'm not. But we got a lot of catching up to do because we've been out and about.
Well, you have. I've been recording.
I have.
So I tried a cigar. I went to Nashville for a meeting. We can go into that a little later. But it was at Priming's Cigar Lounge and Bar there in Nashville. Really classy place. Not sure why the hell they let me in. I had like the fanciest. Well,
they made everybody look good.
Right. Well, I did. I mean, but you know, I'd had some success. I was out celebrating. I brought cigars back. I don't know if any of y'all fired it up yet.
No, I'm saving it for Super Bowl Sunday.
Are you now?
I am. Special cigar for a special day.
So it's the Aviator by Principal Cigars, available only through, I'm pretty sure only through Priming Cigar Lounge and Bar, but they are online. You can look that up. It's a Dominican Puro. It also has within the filler some Peruvian tobacco. And it's got the... It was a double. How do I even say this? It was a finished.
Apparently not well.
Right. So it's kind of a finished, unfinished foot in the sense that it's not your kind of shaggy, you know, just smoke off the excess. It was like pigtailed, with like you would think about, you know, at the head of the cigar.
Right.
And what it did was it created this wonderful slow burn that was, you could retrohale it like hookah tobacco or pipe tobacco. And yet it still had enough oomph to it that you knew you were smoking a cigar and you didn't want the experience to end anytime soon. And because I think of the pigtail there on the foot, I mean, that was a 2.5-3 hour cigar. I thought I was going to get a couple in that night, and looking up, I was like, shit, it's after 11, you know, it's central time. So it's after midnight, my time. So the tasting notes, and again, look this one up. It's worth the bother. It was like a $10 price point for a very large kind of Robusto torpedo kind of thing.
Mm-hmm.
Sort of like a heftier version of the Punta Gorda that Lot 23 Perdomo used to do.
Yeah.
So anise was one of the cloves. Mm-hmm. Bit of roasted meat, kind of that savory flavor, some sweetness and spice, which you expect with a Dominican, and it had an earthiness that I just pull the cigar out of my mouth and stare at it like this has got to be Nicaraguan something, ripe fruit, and this is also I saw this on a number of cigar reviews, wet leaves, which that doesn't sound that appealing,
yeah,
and I admit that, but. The flavor's there, and it's not. It is pleasant. I mean, it's not like you're burning leaves in your front yard, which is also like ABC, a sort of North Carolina thing too.
And that's more like the Kentucky Fire cured.
No. That's awful. Okay. I've not had it. I'm not going.
No, I'm saying burning leaves.
Right. Just, but like you know,
or smoldering leaves would be more like it.
Like burning rubber, I think, or tire fires. No, it has. It's more of an earthy and more tobacco leaf, that very pure sort of tobacco flavor. Mm-hmm. But it just has this, I don't know if it was the shape. It likely could have been that I'd had maybe the most fanciest cocktail I've drank to date. But it was a wonderful experience. Mm-hmm. I uploaded videos of the damn drink that I had because I had to. I mean, you know.
Mm-hmm. No, you did. Yeah, it was required there, I believe.
Right. Well, it certainly wasn't frowned upon.
Mm-hmm.
I had the Dogma, of course.
Of course.
Because, you know, theology and all. So it had Buffalo Trace Bourbon, St. Germain, Orange Blossom Water, Orange Bitters. And, you know, and as much as I have bagged, and I have bagged on this podcast, on the big ice cube in the drink.
No, it's better.
I repent.
More slowly. It doesn't water down.
And so by the time I was, you know, it started melting, I was like well into the cocktail. It really is. It's not bad.
Yeah.
And they also did a cherry tobacco smoke inside the glass while they were preparing the rest of the lovely concoction. And that bit, other than looking neat, and it had like a little, not so much flavor, but the aroma gave you the impression there was cherry in it. That bit, it was kind of, it was neat for a YouTube or a Instagram post, but, you know, I would order it again.
Mm-hmm. Well, we're several minutes in, so it's about time we do this. But I remember somebody getting molds for making the large ice cubes for his birthday a few years ago.
Are you talking about me? I didn't get that. Yes,
I thought somebody gave that to you for your birthday a couple of years ago.
What? Nah, I would remember that.
Oh, because weren't we making fun of now that you finally have a set of big balls?
Yeah.
So no, I was going to say, you know, you'd have to bring your frozen balls for the Super Bowl to put into the old fashions that I'm going to make with the Virgil Cane ginger bourbon.
Wow. I didn't even see that joke coming.
Of course not.
It's on me.
What
are you smoking, Charles?
What am I smoking? I'm smoking the M. Bombay Classic Torpedo.
You've been a fiend for those lately.
I've been a fiend for these.
Have you had this week?
This is the fourth different M. Bombay I smoked this week. I picked up their sample pack, which is the only place you can get these torpedoes. And I did it specifically for the torpedo, but the other cigars have been absolutely fantastic as well.
And you got a good deal on that, as I recall.
Yeah,
too. It's
five cigars for $50.
That was at our friends here in Winston-Salem.
At Top Leaf.
Top Leaf Cigar Lounge.
And I had read about this cigar on Cigar Coop, friend of the podcast, and we're a friend of his. In fact, we get most of our reviews from him. And
we have the palate of swine.
He's amazing.
That tastes like tobacco.
Yeah. Mm. Looks like tobacco on fire.
Mm. Mm. See?
Yeah. But, he raved about this cigar. It's Ecuadorian Connecticut, Ecuadorian binder, Nicaraguan, Dominican, and Peruvian filler. It's a mild cigar, and what he commented on it was that the shape really matches the blend, that having the torpedo shape, forcing the smoke into that smaller area, just seemed to do something. It brought out a lot more of the flavor. It's very creamy and cedary at the beginning, transitions to a little bit of fruitiness. And now that I'm in the back third, I'm starting to pick up just a nice hint of some black pepper.
It's
on the retro.
I mean, Gaia,
nice change.
Gaia got a pretty high rank in, I don't know if it's Cigar Snob or Cigar Aficionado.
I think it was Cigar Snob. Yeah.
It got, and it deserves a ranking, but I didn't appreciate how JR and other tobacconists just jacked up the price on that cigar that the week before it was under $10 or something like that. So.
Yeah.
But that's the way things go.
But Top Leaf, it's still very reasonable.
It is. And they've got a lot of stuff that their boutique brands are bringing in that had the Ego by Felix Azzeline, and that was really good.
Mm, yeah.
So I'll probably be there tomorrow doing paperwork. So.
Okay. Well, I may meet you there tomorrow because I finished my paperwork.
Okay. I may acknowledge you.
You may acknowledge me.
I get off at 12.
How nice. Okay. All right. Well, that's when they open. Four Saints Brewing Company. Four Saints pays homage to the patron saints of beer, St. Wenceslas, St. Nicholas, St. Luke, and St. Augustine of Hippo. They've become the most recognized patron saints for brewing and beer because of their contributions to and associations with the world's favorite sudsy beverage. Four Saints founders Joel McCloskey and Andrew Deming are carrying on the brewing tradition in hopes of future sainthood. Or at least to make some really good beer. Four Saints Brewing Company, Asheboro, North Carolina.
So we've had a great week.
We had a wonderful visit with our good friend of the podcast, the Welsh troubadour himself, Phil Wyman, was in town.
I've had the experience in person now.
In person. Isn't it wild?
It is. Yeah. I was humbled to crack jokes in front of him and, you know, just trying to strong arm him into making that graphic novel from his
The Adventures of Gwendy.
Yeah, there in a Burning Religion. Get that. Well worth the I thought about the minute he walked into Finnegan's Pub and I was like, I should have brought the damn book, Charles.
Should have gotten your autograph. I gotta find mine is already autographed. I just don't no.
Well, mine's autographed. It's just by me, and that's just not nearly as cool.
No.
Yeah.
No, definitely not.
I'm not famous.
Well, not yet. You're infamous, though.
Yeah.
Although I am sort of rethinking my evaluation of Phil, because he likes you, and he likes Trucker Jeff and Cigar Mom.
What's not to like?
Well, I don't know. I mean, I tolerate you guys, but you know, Phil was really taken with you. I'm going to have to rethink that a little bit. But no, seriously, he was...
We have pagans
down here. He had a great time. He had a great time. We had a great time.
What did he get into? Because you took him on like the Cigar Holy Land tour there.
Right. Well, we took him to Top Leaf. He was down at Apex Lounge in out near Cary.
Yeah, well, tell me about that. Because you said they had a ton of boutiques. Wow,
ton of boutiques. You know, they had a lot of the really good stuff that everyone's familiar with that you can get a lot of places. They had all the great stuff from AJ Fernandez and LFD and Pepin and
the big dogs.
Stuff at Perdomo, things that you know you're going to get good sticks and you're familiar with them. But then they had Crowned Heads. They had Roma Craft.
I've got to revisit Roma Craft.
Well, the not the Cro-Magnon, the Indiscretion. That's really good. And they also had Southern Draw, just about all of the big boutiques. Oh, there's an oxymoron. But the ones that are really, really catching fire now, that you may in your loco shop find a handful of these, they had a great selection of them.
Get in on. I think it's going to be the year of trying those boutique brands, taking a little risk there, because been exposed to some really nice things. Mm-hmm. And then you took one of our old friends, Wayne. You guys went and did like basically the Iredell County tour of cigars while I was away.
Yeah, the two best places in Iredell County.
Well, there's not a hell of a lot of them.
Yeah, right. Well, yeah, wasn't that difficult. All right, we were in at Casa Monte Cristo in Mooresville, but then also Florida America.
That was not the cool. That was the one I thought.
Florida America in Statesville. It's a gentleman who moved here a few years ago. He spent 30 years rolling and blending for Padron.
So he's one of the steadiest brands as far as mm-hmm. consistency and quality.
Right. And so he now has his own line. Very nice cigars. He uses combinations of Dominican and Nicaraguan tobaccos. Very, very well put together.
Well, he's getting his tobaccos from, was it
mainly from Oliva?
Yeah.
Oliva. So good quality leaf there.
It was good. I've had one. It was good. Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
I totally sidetracked us there with just cigar nostalgia. Mm-hmm. So what did Phil finally buy when he went to Pipe and Pine? Because I hated that I was sick that day. I was like, God, yeah. I definitely don't need to be around cigars.
Trying to think of everything that he got. He picked up a handful of things.
Well, I know he had to get La Colonia because that's the store brand.
He got La Colonia.
Really
loved that. He got one of the mystery sticks. And he said that
also till they put a band on them.
Right.
Oh, that's a good deal.
Yeah. He said it changed like 7 or 8 times.
That surprised me.
It almost seemed like every inhale, it was a different cigar he was smoking.
Wow. I don't doubt that.
No,
I still got
all.
A few of those beauties aging in my humidor. Put them down there in the bottom. So I forget that I have them until, you know, mm-hmm. time to dig through.
Yeah, he was just mainly impressed also with Larry and Pete and what a great shop they run.
It's a good shop.
Yeah, he also got some good beer. We got some of the Bitter Brothers from Four Saints.
Shameless plug.
Yeah, shameless plug. And enjoyed that. You know, I don't know what you did for the State of the Union, but Phil and I didn't have the TV on and we drank whiskey, smoked cigars, and talked philosophy.
What was that, Tuesday?
Yeah.
I was trying to get over a head cold, so I was probably watching reruns of something on Netflix while playing mm-hmm. with my phone. So,
okay. You probably still would have been better off with some whiskey.
Well, it could have helped with the cough, you know.
Yeah, could have.
Ease the pain.
Yeah. Well, one of the things that Phil has done is He's invited me to the UK.
That's where
summer.
I was going next. Yeah. Yes.
Yeah. Phil has been spending the last several years traveling through America, going to various festivals. Last year, he went to the UK and to Europe. And he volunteers at the festivals, but he also participates by providing the festival goers opportunities to find some spirituality. Not necessarily faith and religion, but some sort of spiritual experience. And it comes from his recognition that festival goers tend to be searching for something. That's why they go to festivals. And the festivals right. don't always, because they tend to be focused on just certain things, they don't always have a spiritual aspect, and that's what he does.
Well, but it stinks, though, because that's what takes him away from the Wild Goose Festival, shameless plug.
Yeah, absolutely. But he invited me to join him in Wales. There's the How the Light Gets In Festival, which is a philosophy festival.
Go ahead, try that again.
And
this is what happens when you don't drink and try to podcast.
Yeah. And then around the same time, there's also an international book festival in Wales in the same city. I am going to do that. And I have posted a GoFundMe.
Yes.
Because not only does it cost money to get over there and tour and do all those festivals, it means that I have to decline a teaching assignment for the summer term. So besides the outlay of money to do the festivals, I will not be receiving any salary. And yet,
right.
Creditors don't care.
They don't.
They don't. So I have put up a GoFundMe. You can either go to GoFundMe. We've also put the link on our Twitter, on my Facebook, and on our Facebook. Really appreciate whatever you can contribute to that.
You too can help an elderly Jew tour Wales.
Yeah.
I
promise to pay for the whiskey out of my own pocket.
Right.
And not use my GoFundMe funds for that. Unless you want me to. If you say, here's go buy yourself a pint, I will accept that contribution as well.
Right. Well, you just get to go to pubs and the import is like Miller Lite, so
yeah.
And they're really classy about it.
Ooh. I'll take the domestic in those cases.
Depends on how close you are to Manchester.
And we're also we are discussing maybe plans for Burning Man.
You're going to go to Burning Man?
Well, we had an interesting discussion. I was educating Phil about why you don't call someone a Pharisee if there's a Jew in the room.
I saw that YouTube bit. Is that on one of Phil's feeds? Or
yes. Okay, one of the things Phil does is he does these short little interviews with people and he posts them on YouTube.
I feel left out on that.
Yeah. Well, he asked me to do that after I pointed out to him that it's not really cool to call people to use the term Pharisee when there are Jews in the room, because it just brings up a whole bunch of persecution memories for us, because the Pharisees get blamed for doing things to Jesus that they didn't do, like kill him.
Right.
And so when you do that, it kind of reminds us that, yeah, that was the excuse you used for generations and centuries to run us out of Europe and slaughter us on the way to the Holy Land in the Crusades. So anyway, we were talking about that, and then it led to discussions of the differences between the Pharisees and the Sadducees.
Were drinking with Phil and decided to record something.
Yeah, we recorded it the next day when we were both sober.
Okay, yes.
But while when we were sober, so we're talking about Sadducees, Pharisees, and Essenes, which is the group who thought both of them were crazy, and so they just took all their books and went to Qumran and lived in the caves.
Don't forget the Zealots.
Well, the Zealots, they went up onto Masada and...
The Skerit.
Well, the Skerit just went around killing people.
Right.
But the Essenes were cool because they preserved not just the canonical texts of the time, but any other texts that had been written, whether it had been put into the canon or not. So they open up for us so many debates as to how that choice is made and why certain texts got in and didn't, because they preserved them.
We'll put a link to that in this post. We'll get, because yeah. I have to confess, I saw it just minutes before my computer decided, oh, we're ready to work now. Mm-hmm. So I haven't listened to it yet. So I was like 10 minutes or so. And
oh, let's be honest. You're like, oh yeah, really? I'm going to waste another 5 minutes of my life. I can't get back listening to Charles.
Well, at least I'm honest. That okay, I'm not you. like folks that like, oh, I loved your podcast. Like we only posted it 5 seconds ago. Yeah. Even we haven't listened to it that closely.
Anyway, so we're saying that wouldn't it be cool to have a Qumran camp at Burning Man?
Burning Man.
They set up tents so the inside is dark and cool like a cave, and just have a whole bunch of books for people to come in and study and discuss philosophy and theology. I thought of how we could take it one step further. Gonna find a Jewish scribe, also known as a sofer, and see if we can find one who'll be working on a Torah scroll at Burning Man. And then it's a mitzvah for every Jew to write a Torah in their lifetime. And since that's physically impossible, the rabbis say that the way to fulfill that mitzvah is when an actual scribe is writing a Torah scroll. If you put your hand on his hand or her hand while they inscribe a single letter, it's as if you've written the whole scroll. So
that's how they do it at Chapel Hill for like most of their football basketball players.
Yeah. Well, that's with the Scantron sheet bubbling it in.
Right. Exactly. Right.
All right. As long as you've bubbled in one, it's as if you've bubbled in all of them.
All. Right.
But how cool would that be to say to any Jews at Burning Man, you're here at Burning Man, you're doing all this other stuff. How about also fulfilling a mitzvah of writing a Torah?
Mm. Are you taking Mrs. Dr. J to this?
Not sure yet, because she's going to be in Greece. I don't know if she'll be back. She will be back for Burning Man.
Yeah,
we'll have to see, because she'll be back in time for Wild Goose.
Right.
Yeah.
So who's they'll right. be like? Oh, that's Gail. Who the hell's the right. Jew and the fit Santa Claus beside him?
Right. We'll see how that goes.
Right. So we also got this week David Finnegan Hosey's book, the advanced read copy of Christ on the Psych Ward, which we've put links to and will no doubt put more. I haven't started it yet, but I've had it on my desk and I noticed that it walked off 3 times today.
That wasn't my fault, because I wasn't there.
No, it wasn't. But other people are like, oh, that's that. I mean, just the title. Granted, I was chair office with a bunch of chaplains, so I've been looking forward to this since. I think we were actually just like disappointed back in July when we were at Wild Goose, shameless plug. And David's like, oh, I'm writing this book, Christ on the Psych Ward. We're like, oh, great. We're going to the book tent next. And he's like, it'll come out later next year. And I'm like, so we've waited. And if the book's anything like his groups that he led there at Wild Goose, we're in for a good read.
Well, hurry up and read it so that you can give it to me.
He didn't send you one?
No.
Ah, well.
I don't know. I think he sent it to, quote, us.
Apparently you're not a member of the tribe. Yeah.
Different tribe.
There's only one tribe.
You really want to go there, do you?
So we have to get David back on and ask him about not only to plug the book and tell us how that's going, but I'd be curious to hear how he's doing now that he's doing the full-time chaplain type job there at Georgetown. So
Virgil Caine Rye Whiskey started with one goal: create the best damn whiskey around. Drawing on their culinary know-how and driven by flavor, founders David and Ryan, both accomplished chefs, were inspired to boldly blend, infuse, and tinker with choice ingredients to craft category-shattering whiskeys, proving that it's not about stuffy tradition, but about taking what you know and taking chances. Each of their spirits is a tribute to their dedication to making whiskey their way. A whiskey they'd want to drink. Again, Virgil Caine Rye Whiskey. A damn fine whiskey.
So should we?
A lot of things happening. Going on. A lot of things that are just really showing that, if you don't mind me saying so, as an outside observer, there's a lot of shit going on in American evangelical Christianity right now. There's some problems.
You know, I think, you know, we were talking about what do we talk about tonight, and we sort of had some direction, and we've gone down this road before, and it just strikes me as, again, how do we, and admitting that I'm part of the problem, as because I want to hold on to my side, and I'm fearful if I let down my guard, and I have all my reasons to keep it up, those that see differently from me would take advantage of that versus setting down theirs and seeing if we can meet somewhere in the middle. But it's just there's a part of me that mourns that other brothers and sisters within the faith have gone, and I feel I can say this, so far from the letter of the law, the meaning and purpose of the scriptures they're quoting, that it's just a tragedy. But at the same time, there's a part of me going, I hope it goes far enough that whatever this is dies and never comes back. Mm-hmm. That it literally runs its life out, or at least goes dormant for a couple decades. Mm-hmm. But we were talking about Jerry Jr., which proving that
there's not too much to genetics.
No, they're
or maybe there's more to it than we realize.
Right, you know. So the chlorine, I think, is really the word we're looking for. Mm-hmm. But recent tweet, Jesus said, love our neighbors as ourselves, but never told Caesar how to run Rome. He never said Roman soldiers should turn the other cheek in battle, or that Caesar should allow the barbarians to be Roman citizens, or that Caesar should tax the rich to help the poor. That's our job. And I just kind of, my first reaction was, if I could have a moment with him, especially if it was particularly public, would be to ask, did you feel the same way in 2008? Did you feel the same way in 2012? You know, of course, and the answer is going to be, well, no. The honest answer would be no. But that tweet, and it feels almost, it's so asinine. Mm-hmm. That it really, I honestly, when we were talking about what are we going to talk about tonight, I was like, why even give this oxygen, you know, because it's so, I think what I want to do is we could sit there and pick apart what's wrong with that sentence or sentences. Well, no, it's one big long sentence.
Yeah.
So, well, at least that part's biblical because the punctuation wasn't in there originally either. But I mean, yeah, we could point out that Christ, you know, that's that whole Pharisee thing. Jews didn't kill Jesus. Rome had a reason to kill Jesus, and it was because he decided to enter Rome as a Jewish king, riding on a donkey instead of a steed. We can definitely say that it's not even worth it, Charles. God,
well, I mean, well, it's no, we don't need to parse it. One, it's been parsed so well by so many others who have added to the thread discussion and have pointed out the grossness of the theology present in it. I would say the grammarian in me, though, that last clause, that's our job. Now, without the punctuation, and so now we can do a little Torah interpretation, that last clause can be put to helping the poor and feeding the hungry, that's our job.
Well, it's or, that's our job. Well,
or
we have whole, to tax the rich because the church isn't doing it.
Right. But or the whole thing he's talking about, the whole opposing the civil government, that's our job. That could, you know, hey, it's not the church that's supposed to stand up to the government. That's our job being individual people. So, you know, okay, thanks, Junior. We'll take that from here and we'll feed the resistance. I think it's just that tweet, rather than focusing on that tweet itself, is it's emblematic of how the right in evangelical American Christianity has hitched their wagon to Donald Trump, has conflated patriotism into their theology, and it is alienating so many, many followers. The whole empty the pews, the ex-evangelical movement against this.
Well, that's what the recovering
yeah.
evangelicals, as we heard often at Wild Years. Mm-hmm. I think before everything became super polarized, and I'm definitely a part of that problem, is that I think the counter to this sort of sectarianism is a theology based in grace.
For sure.
But I want to then grab up and put my fist back up, is that I don't know that I have the luxury of just saying grace. I do, because I'm in a position of undeserved superiority, white privilege, white male privilege, white male educated Southerner living in the South privilege. But I don't know that there's that tension, is that I don't know that with the winner takes all kind of stakes and the detriment to the poor, the lost, those that are struggling. I don't know that if I can be faithful and put my guard down. Mm-hmm.
Let me ask this. And those of you, if you're listening and want to join in, please comment on this. And maybe it's a question I just thought of now, if I had when we did our Reformation podcast, which we should do again, is it possible to just ignore these idiots and
no
create your churches and your communities with more like-minded Christians and go on and say they don't speak for us?
That's still saying I don't think you can ignore them, because that kind of goes back to the silence is acquiescence. Silence is, you might as well, is support. I mean, and that's a saying that's been in civil rights discussions for ages. I think the catch is, how can you move past and not give oxygen to just this racist?
That's what I'm getting at. How distorted can that be done? And instead of everybody fighting them and arguing with them, say, yeah, that guy's an idiot. He doesn't speak for me or my Christianity or the Christ I believe in. And I'm going to carry on doing what I believe is Christ's work.
I think you have to do it with even less comment than that. I think you have to go with a total. My reaction would be, let me live in such a way and behave in such a way, and this will be a challenge for me, as it would be for anybody, that you can see by my witness and my actions that no, in fact, we're not all like that. I don't know that it necessarily. If I were amongst more mixed company than you and I, which is saying something when you think about it, how would I be able to defend myself? Which again, I'm still using language like that. How would I be able to represent myself in a way that challenged nonsense like that, but did so in a way that was, and I think this is the key for grace, is it's in somehow invitational. Mm-hmm. It extends that, you know what? I could sit here and enumerate, you know, just the nonsense in that one run-on sentence. And because of what I stand for and what others perceive me to stand for, you're going to fight back. Even if we were all on the same team and we were talking and just none of us were around or them were around, it's like, that's just nonsense. Jeez. I think that has to happen. Some kind of venue where it's like, okay, this isn't working. And to give people the grace to say, you know what? I totally misread that. That mm-hmm. was just completely out of line mm-hmm. without feeling, you know, it's almost, well, I mean, it is, it's the ridiculousness of the Alabama Senate race. We've mm-hmm. got a pedophile, but because we don't want to lose a Senate seat, we're going to back the pedophile, mm-hmm. which, you know, still managed to lose by a small amount, but I mean, that's kind of the alternative, is that seriously, can y'all not see what's wrong with this? And it's not that long ago, people would have been able to go, yeah, this is nonsense.
Mm. But again, let me rephrase, because I hear where you're going with this, and I think that's an important point that you're making. But I also see, you know, when you said, you know, defend or justify, why do you feel it necessary to defend or justify your Christianity in light of what these people say that is not a true reflection? Is it enough just to point out that's hypocritical and now I'm going to live a different way? And it's not just, it's because it's not just these political ones. There's also in the last few weeks, and I mean, this has been ongoing, but there's been some major reporting is the abuse by pastors, sexual abuse. And then the whole women should not be allowed, not that they just can't be preachers. We're not even going to allow them to teach in seminary.
Yeah,
those kinds of things, which get are much more insidious because they have a much greater impact on people's lives than just that stupid statement did.
No, it is.
How do you move past it? How do you?
You don't
again say this does not. They do not speak for me. They do not represent the Christ I know, the Christianity I practice. And instead of engaging with them and trying to show them wrong, take the steps and actions to correct the problems that they're creating.
The tragedy is that none of that is a new fight. Mm-hmm. And that's where I would definitely part company with Roman Catholicism, although I think there's a number of Roman Catholics that would do that likewise as far as ordination of women, certain Baptist conventions. Obviously don't. The UMC, we'd like to say that we have a spotless history, but it's not. And it's still, even in denominations where women are appreciated and have the access to being ordained, and there's still a double standard, most definitely. And there is still a very real glass ceiling. And that didn't really answer the question, did it?
Well, I didn't really expect an answer. That was more of a, wow, yeah, look, we got to think about, you know, what are the, as you put before, you know, how do you live your life in true faith that serves in and of itself as the counter to these arguments and these idiots without having to, and therefore not have to directly engage them? Hmm. And is that possible? Especially given the amplification of their voices through social media, so many people think, oh my gosh, if that's what Christianity means, I don't want any more of it.
Well, and that's the part where that's the kind of like, I wonder if that does choke out at least a strain of Christianity.
Right. And so that's what I'm saying. So instead of standing and screaming and trying to defend yourself against them in a shouting match, is it possible to say, as you point out, no, I'm going to live my life in this way that it will be through. How will they know we are Christian? Well, our acts.
The old songs, through our love. Mm-hmm. I think that maybe it's not me fighting for my own sort of agenda, but looking to where those who are vulnerable to do that sort of prophetic type ministry of coming alongside and standing with. And I think there is some, I think with the Me Too and with a lot of high-profile celebrities and the like, you know, politicians getting taken to court for horrible, horrible abuses against women. I think there is some movement, but I feel like as a man that I don't know that I can say that and do justice to the struggle of, you know, my sisters in Christ or other fellow sisters of Abraham and like, and those who aren't of either. That's sort of like when we were having that discussion about women's issues or something over many, many moons ago. Gail's in the room with us, and we finally realized, oh, we should probably shut up and let her talk. I don't know. I'm floundering a bit with how to get my mind around this problem in a way that's not defensive and combative, but still stands with those who are vulnerable and do not have the luxury of even making a statement like I just did.
And that's where my question was aimed is, I think that's the better discussion to have. It is discussing what you're trying to articulate, because it is the more difficult, because it's the one that I think, again, truly impacts people's lives. Sort of the same that we see in Judaism when people talk about things that hurt the faith and people leaving, that it's so often couched in, well, we don't want the faith to collapse. Will the faith survive? And anytime you get into discussions of things that are about the institution, it's so easy to forget that the institution is comprised of people.
Right.
And looking at, all right, well, people are leaving. Why are they leaving? What is it that we are not providing? What are we not doing? Rather than standing up and yelling at the people who are driving them out, don't do that. Don't you know you're hurting? And you know, and show that we can provide by example. And again, focus on the people who are affected, not on the institution that's affected. And very often that's how the discussion is framed. And that's why I was saying move past. Let's move past how this hurts, quote, Christianity, and how this hurts Christians, how this hurts actual people, the damage that is done, even in a statement, because yes, it's all semantics, and it is all semantics, and words matter and words hurt. And there are people who are affected by statements like Falwell Jr. is making. So we're not minimizing that. It's, again, rather than see their effect on, quote, Christianity as some monolithic entity that has no humanity to it, to the fact that, no, it's comprised of humans. And so what is the effect on these humans when these kinds of hateful things are said and done?
Is it too much of an exaggeration to also say that, What if it's got more voice than it really has nationwide? I mean, you know, a man bites dog makes the papers. You know, how much of it is that versus what if people really are able to see this is nonsense? And while I may not be able to say that out loud for any number of reasons, you know, I wonder how many people out there are also going like, yeah, I probably would not want to break bread with the Jew or the Gentile on this podcast, but I just being honest, that is kind of ridiculous what they're saying. Then I think also there's sort of a nearsightedness in assuming that everybody even gives a rat's rear end about faith traditions, you know, having to live in a world that needs one to have some sort of orienting system to what's going on.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, the reality is there's plenty of people that even do mediocre podcasts that are not persons of faith, nor would, would even be bothering to have this conversation.
Oh, absolutely. Yeah.
So there.
Okay. Point taken. Well, one of the last things I just want to touch on, because it's this week's Torah portion, is Yitro, which is, I think, appropriate for us to talk about, because it is the only Torah portion that is named for a Gentile, okay? Because it's part of it.
What was that in English?
I was about to say, you don't give me the opportunity to do these things. Yitro is Hebrew for Jethro, who is...
I loved him, Max Baird Jr.
Yeah, oh, great. But also Moses' father-in-law.
Ah, the less famous.
The less famous of the two. He wasn't as rich. He didn't his uncle didn't strike oil. In this parsha, in this portion for this week, is also revelation at Sinai. A few podcasts ago, we were having an interesting discussion about revelation and how it's done and its meaning in both Judaism and Christianity. And so, in reading this week's parsha, I brought that up part of a point, because you're asking about, we're talking about, the entirety of Torah and Torah being, revealed past tense, and you know, Christianity looking at Revelation as a present process. And then I realized that while we say that, you know, everything was revealed at Sinai, doesn't mean that we understand the totality of that revelation. So in Judaism, revelation is an ongoing process.
I think that would be both both and for us too. I mean,
But that was kind of
God's mystery is something one is perpetually exploring, or the classic: the finite cannot contain the infinite.
Mm-hmm. But it's even.
You know what does occur to me with that approach is that may be the way that you come for Christianity, at least. I think maybe that's somehow how you get to that point of grace, to where you can both say, you know, we might both be right, we might both be wrong, and respond to seeking out God's will with curiosity, openness, and humility.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
So an hour and a half later, I managed to say one sentence that I won't have to edit out. It's a win.
It's a win.
Words of wisdom. Let's go home.
Well, it's one of the things that Phil and I were talking about is when I was sharing with him what is special about our relationship, you and me.
I love that you're drinking booze with other Gentiles talking about me.
Yeah. Yeah.
Wow.
So yeah, you know, a little gossip behind your back never hurt. But what makes, I think, for us the interfaith part is that we both recognize that the differences are really, really, really important because they shine light on each of our faiths, but that also that similarity doesn't mean sameness. We may have just agreed that we're coming to the same point about revelation, but it's also that we both recognize that they're colored differently for us. And while there is that nice agreement, we're going to say, we can both say that. It doesn't mean that it's exactly the same thing or that one is better than the other.
It's curiosity. It's humility. Exactly. It's respect. It's also, you know, for interfaith dialogue, it's, a phrase that I use often in work is that I'm not here to convert you. At best, I'm hoping to connect you to your own spirituality in a way that is meaningful and, of course, in my context and my work, benefits your health and wellness.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah. I think that I don't think we ever just sat down and said, okay, these are the rules for this relationship. It's just sort of understood.
Yeah, yeah. That's what's cool about it.
It's the unicorn. It's the unicorn of relationships with regards to interfaith, where usually it's trying to conflate and say, oh, we're really all saying the same thing. Like, no. Or getting the photo op and the press release versus,
right.
You said something while we were hanging out with Phil that kind of, I think, in a way, maybe it's not the best example, but it struck me of just how far that's gone, is that I can now make, you can joke, you can make the jokes.
Yeah.
You're allowed. I mean, and that's with some guardedness and knowing there's boundaries and taste. But I think there's something in that statement when you shared that Monday night. I was like, oh, that's kind of a reflection of genuine connection. Is you're comfortable enough with the other that you can let them be other and you can be you and have, again, humility, because, you know, apparently I'm getting paid to say that word. Allows you to laugh. It allows you to realize that this is not somebody that poses a threat. But again, saying that as a white, 40-year-old, Protestant American, educated, middle class, and all the other areas of privilege that I didn't deserve and yet still benefit from.
Mm-hmm. Well, it's trust, and none of those things matter when you're in matter in an I-thou situation, because the other is always other. And let's be honest, as we know, Jews are the quintessential other.
They're one of the quintessential others. I think many people have made.
There are many others, and there are others who have been made othered, and there are people that have been othered by others. But not quintessential. We're the universal other because we are other to almost every group.
Well, it's the experience of otherness that you know best. Because I mean, I've never been black. I've never been a woman. I've never been Jewish.
I'm referring to
I'm not disagreeing
in the philosophical I thou
right.
situation. But even for women and African Americans and Latinos and Arabs and in almost every culture, yes, they can identify plenty of others. And the one constant is almost every single one of those groups will list Jews.
Yeah, I'm not
the other. So, I mean, in the greater sense with the other in the capital letter philosophical I, thou, where you have to give up the subjectivity of the subject to allow the other and the subject to have agency and authenticity, and that becomes the true relationship.
For those that are not as familiar with Buber or, I guess, really, if you get right down to it, Heidegger as well. The I thou versus the I it, the thou in respecting the other is identifying the other as a person with inherent dignity, rights, sacred worth, value versus a means to your end. Mm-hmm. And instead seeing them as an end in themselves. For those
in the
shorthand version.
Right, and in that you see, we should do a whole cast on Rosenzweig and Buber and I thou because it's foundational to a lot of what we do.
Well, and you could do the oppositions, having read Heidegger just for giggles a few summers ago.
Yeah. Well, also Levinas, so, which I'm doing now. So let's do words of wisdom.
Right.
And save our listeners some sanity. It's his birthday, and he's one of my favorite poets, Langston Hughes. Brings us tonight's
the Harlem words. Renaissance.
Yeah. Oh, I love Langston Hughes. Ugh. So this is, again, just one of the most beautiful quotes, and I love how he speaks and writes. So, oh, let my land be a land where liberty is crowned with no false patriotic wreath, but opportunity is real and life is free. Equality is in the air we breathe.
Well, I'm Chris Henson, and I'm still the Gentile.
And I'm Charles Breton, and I'm still the Jew.
Join us on our next episode, where you can listen to a Jew and a Gentile walk into a bar mitzvah.
Special thanks to Ethan Sapphire for letting us use his song Shoulda Woulda Coulda as our theme. You can download Ethan's music at soundclick.com/Ethan Sapphire.
Shoulda, woulda, coulda, but I didn't, that's for real. You can't get back the hand if you didn't like the deal. You made your choices, you gotta live with that. If you learn from your mistakes, you'll get another chance at that.